Welcome back to PNP Network. My guest on the line right now is the lovely, the adorable Lisa Welchel. And you all know her, of course, as Blair on The Facts of Life. I used to love that show. And she's written a great book we're going to talk about as well. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing great. And, we actually had met once before in our lives.
When's that?
In around 1983, I think it was, or around there. I was in California in Sherman Oaks visiting a friend of mine. And I went to the Galleria,
Really?
and I was at the food court, and there was really no chairs around. It was pretty much full, and I was walking around with a tray, looking for a place to sit. And this beautiful young woman said to me, "You know, there's room over here if you want to sit down." And I looked at her, and I kept looking at her. And I said, "Geez, she looks real familiar." And it was you. Yes, and you were
Well, see,
so
it
sweet and so
pays to
nice.
be nice to strangers. Now you'll
Yes.
give me a good interview, right?
Exactly. See, you never know. Never know who you're going to run into on the
That's
streets.
right.
But it's interesting though that that you were so nice and so down to earth, and at that point the show was a big hit.
Well, great. Well, it's good to talk to you again then.
Well, it's been too long though.
Yeah.
Things have gone around for you. But I want to talk a little bit about the TV show first. It's interesting to note that it's now on Nick at Night, and a whole new generation of people are watching it.
Yes, it's so much fun to have these, 8, 9, 11-year-old girls coming up and saying, "Oh, I watch your show every night. I just love it. I won't miss it. I'll even tape it if I can't watch it." And it's really, really neat to have a whole new generation getting to know the girls.
Now, do your three watch the show?
You know what? It's on past their bedtime, but there was a marathon on when it first launched on Nick at Night, and we watched it every night. Not until midnight, but we watched it every night, and then they just got the biggest kick out of it.
So, what did they think when they saw Mom?
Oh, they just kept saying, "Mom, I can't believe you acted like that. I can't believe you wore that. I can't believe you said that."
Well, it was a show that was a spin-off of Different Strokes, and of course, Charlotte Ray was the person who starred in the show, and you played one of the prime characters, Blair Warner, who was kind of a snobby young lady. Tell us a little bit about the rest of the cast. Do you see all the people in the cast still? Anybody that you're friends with, or?
You know what? We see each other occasionally on different, fundraisers and events and birthday parties. I make it a point to keep in touch with Nancy McKeon, who plays Jo, and I'll actually see her next month at a fundraiser for that Charlotte is entertaining, going to be entertaining there.
Oh, that's good. See, Nancy's been on the show as well. She's very nice.
Oh yeah.
She was promoting a show she had on CBS for a while that unfortunately didn't last too long.
But she has a new show coming on in January on Lifetime Channel about some lady cops.
Cool.
Yeah, so she'll be great.
A lot of people don't realize that Molly Ringwald was discovered kind of in The Facts of Life. That was her first big acting role.
And you know what? Even fewer people know that I worked with Molly Ringwald even before that, when I was one of the Mouseketeers on the new Mickey Mouse Club, and on Fridays was Talent Roundup Day, what they used to call it in the 50s. We called it Showtime Day. And she was just a little tiny tyke, must have been 6 or 8 years old, and she performed and sang this, belted out this jazz number.
That's funny. And
Yeah.
Mackenzie Astin also got his start on that show, John Astin's kid. He played little Andy
Right.
on the show. And it's interesting also that it was a pioneering show as well, because at one point Jerry Jewell played, I believe it was your cousin.
That's right. She played Cousin Jerry, and she had cerebral palsy, and was showing that you can have a, be physically challenged and be funny and talented and, be on a hit TV show.
Yeah, I don't know if she's still performing at this point. I haven't.
She's doing a lot of, motivational speaking.
Yeah, she seemed like a pretty nice person.
Yes, wonderful.
Did the cast get along well?
Yeah, we really did. As a matter of fact, they did a E-channel expose, but there was nothing to expose, so it was just kind of a nice love fest.
Well, talking about Love Fest, I had heard that there may actually be a reunion movie in the works.
They're writing it now, and assuming all goes well, we'll probably film it in the spring.
Wouldn't that be cool, huh?
Yeah, really fun.
I always loved that show, and it's so nice to see it back again, and it'll be nice to see you back on the small screen.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now you have pretty much disappeared from the acting profession and become a mom.
Yeah, we filmed the last show in March of 88. Then I was married in July of 88. 10 months later, I found out I was pregnant with my first child and then had three children 3 years in a row. So I just I dropped out of sight just because I was mostly in the OBGYN office.
Yeah, I think it's pretty funny, though. One of the things you wrote in the book here was about someone that you knew saying to you after the third year, you had kids all over the place, diapers everywhere, and she's saying, oh, it must be nice not to work anymore, you know? People don't realize that that's the most the toughest work, but also the most rewarding there is.
It really is, but oh my goodness, I wanted to slap her with a wet wipe, and that was actually Jerry Jewell that said that.
Was it
the girl
really?
We were just talking about.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's a lot tougher work than I ever did.
Oh yeah, and it's funny because you had that act that you had the your role as Blair, who was the spoiled little girl.
I know,
and
she probably would have hired a really good nanny.
Exactly, that's exactly.
And missed out on an awful lot.
And I also wonder, your husband, Steve, that's his name, right?
Right.
He's a preacher, correct?
Well, you know what? He's a pastor, and the reason I make that differentiation is because he's more over the information technologies at our church. It's a pretty big church and a couple of campuses and a radio and television ministry. So he keeps all the stuff up and running that's technological.
I see. So he's kind of behind the scenes kind of
yeah,
guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, I mean, when he got married, he must have said to himself, wow, I've got Blair Warner here. Look at this beautiful woman here, Lisa Welch. I am so excited, you know. I'm marrying a sitcom star, and he probably figured it was going to be Easy Street after that, huh?
I know. As I talk about it in the book, I felt really bad. He woke up, you know, 10 months later, and I was pregnant and stay-at-home mom, and my roots were growing out, and the extra 10 pounds on my hips and spit up on my shoulders, and I was like... Sorry, honey, you married Lisa, not Blair.
Now, the book is called The Creative Correction, and by the way, the website's also creativecorrection.com, and it's a really interesting book. It's from Tyndale Press, or Tyndale, T-Y-N-D-A-L-E, and Lisa Welchel is the author of the book. And, you know, I have two children myself, one's 9, one's 6, and there are so many things that all kids do, and there are so many books out there saying what you should do if the kid does this, and It's not exactly an A and B equals C type of situation. It's always different for everybody's family. You're also dealing with an ADHD child, ADHD, and I have many friends that have children with the same problems, which present even different problems than the other kids do. Let's talk about some of the issues that everybody has. For instance, disrespect, kids swearing, kids having no respect for their parents. Some scenarios and some of the things that you're recommending.
Well, let's just talk about the swearing. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can go around that. You know, you can correct the behavior. One of the things that we do in our house for any kind of offense of the tongue, you know, that's pretty serious, whether it's a pretty serious cuss word or whether it would be lying, is we just put a little dab of Tabasco sauce on my finger and then dab it on the tip of their tongue. And it's kind of like a spanking on the tongue. It stings, and it goes away, but the memory lasts for a long time. And so that's a pretty strong correction. On the other hand, we try to help them understand. You know, one of the illustrations that I've used, object lessons I've used, is to take two glasses of water and actually fill up one glass of water with water out of the toilet, and then empty it. I mean, one glass, empty glass with water out of the toilet, and then empty it. Then fill both of the glasses with Kool-Aid and say, you know, which one of these glasses would you drink out of? And of course they're going to say the one that, you know, was not filled with toilet water.
Mm-hmm.
And then I explain, exactly. And if you want your words to be received, and if you want your words to bring life to other people, then you need to keep it clean and keep it out of the potty and no more potty mouth. And it kind of helps them understand and see with, you know, of course they're gagging and cracking up all the way, but at least it's an illustration to help them understand why you shouldn't be speaking that way if you want your words to be received and taken seriously at other times.
Yeah, I know. I'm out in public quite a bit, and I noticed that a lot of the parents, especially, I can't say especially fathers, both, when they hear their kids swear, sometimes they'll just grab them and just start spanking them. And, you know, there's two sides to the whole spanking issue, but it doesn't seem to me like you're a big believer in that particular thing.
You know what? I was very thankful to be spanked as a kid, and I was thankful for the being able to spank my children when, especially when they were little, and you know, they couldn't understand a lot of what I was saying, and it would maybe save their, you know, if not save their life, at least teach them some pretty important issues at an early age that they needed to. But there really did come a point when it wasn't appropriate, and there also came a point when it wasn't working either. And especially with an ADHD child, it can also oftentimes send them spiraling even further down. And that's why I ultimately wrote the book. It was because I had really tried traditional child rearing methods, and they had been successful to a point, but then I had to get creative, and so I took all my creativity that I used to use on the show and poured it into raising my children. And so my friends kept saying, "You got to write these ideas down. Not everybody thinks like you do."
Now, since your husband is a pastor, I know that you've integrated the scripture into the book as well. How important is that?
You know what makes it really, really good is you no longer have to be the bad guy. Instead of just saying, "Well, because I'm the mom and I say so," or "I'm the dad and that's the way it is," you can say, "You know what?" And the scriptures are written in there under every topic that you could deal with children, whether it be, you know, sibling conflict, whining, laziness, disrespect, arguing. There's a scripture reference so that you don't have to have a Bible handy or even know what it says. You just go look it up and say, "Okay, well, I'm dealing with a smart mouth," and look that up and see what it says in the Bible about it. And you don't have to be the bad guy. You can say, "You know what? This is what the Bible says about that. And this Bible was written because God created the world, and He knows what makes it work. And I want life to work for you. I want you to be happy. And these are the rules that He says. If you follow these, you will be happy, and you will have a blessed life. And so that's why I'm enforcing this."
One of the things that I see frequently, and in my own family as well, the two children whacking each other, arguing constantly. So if you turn your back for 1 minute, they're having some kind of, "Daddy, this one hit me. Mama, this one hit me." What kind of things do you suggest to kind of diffuse some of this sibling stuff that goes on?
Well, something I did actually just about 15 minutes ago. My two girls were fighting, and they'd been fighting all morning long. I mean, it didn't matter. They must have just woke up thinking about fighting. They were probably dreaming of fighting before they ever woke up. And so finally I said, "You know what, girls, you meet me in the bathroom, and I'll be there in a second." And I went in there, and I said, "Okay, here's your punishment. You may not come out of this bathroom until you come up with a song about your arguing this morning." And they said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, you come up with a song. And you decide it together, you write it together, and you come out and sing it for us."
Mm-hmm.
Well, 5 minutes later, they came out giggling and laughing and singing, "One fine morning, I got in trouble, E-I-E-I-O." And they had a whole song written about their arguing this morning, and the rest of the day went great, the rest of the morning. But there's lots of different ideas like that in there, too. If there's shouting and going on, I'd say, "Okay, fine, but take your shouting outside and change what you're saying. Get on either side of the backyard and shout at each other 20 times, 'I love you and you're my best friend.'" That helps get rid of some of that anger, and it certainly replaces some of the other things they may choose to say to each other, and they come in and they're usually laughing again.
I think there's some really interesting things that are in this book. I like the book a lot. And one of the things you talk about is that, you know, everything is not always perfect. We all want our children to be perfect children, and I'm guilty of that as much as anybody else. And there's a very funny story you tell in here about one of your children that during church one day when you were meeting with the teachers came running in and started misbehaving all over the place. And
isn't it just the way it is?
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, you know what? Take it one step further. It often happens when I'm on one of these phone interviews, too. You hear all this screaming and hollering and yelling in the background.
Yeah, that would really emphasize the effectiveness of the book, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Well, now, kids, I want you to turn to page 18.
That's right.
Now, I assume that this evolves all the time, so there'll probably be a part two coming out one of these days.
Maybe. You know what we're doing, though, because it's not only evolving and that I'm faced with different things that they're as they grow up and coming up with new ideas, you know, I'm receiving a lot of other ideas from parents across the country that say, "Hey, you know what? I have a creative correction, too, that I do." And they are submitting it up at the website, at the creativecorrection.com website. And so we're, you know, processing those, and we're going to add those and just kind of have a whole little database there of people that maybe there'll become a point next year or in the next couple of months. You know, it's in the kitchen and somebody just did something, you can run into the other room and put a search word in and come up with an idea for correction.
Now, we talked to Paul Peterson and many of the folks involved with kid actors. And I'm just wondering, in terms of your own life, you grew up pretty much on the TV screen. Was it difficult? Was it easy? How did you get through it? And when the show ended, how did you handle that particular moment?
You know, that's a good question, especially about when the show ended. I think that's a... I think that's one of the hardest things about being a child actor is that when it does end, it's such a high of being on television and all the attention and all the money and all the stuff that goes along with it, that especially as a child, I mean, you've pretty much attained as high as you're going to go at 12 or 13. And what a hard thing to live the rest of your life, realizing that, you know, you'll probably never make that much money. You'll probably never get that much attention or never feel that successful again. That's a hard thing. That's one of the reasons why I'm not encouraging my children to go into show business, because, you know, it's a lose-lose situation. Either they are successful, and then that happens, where do you go from there? Or they're not successful, and they just get rejected at every audition. I was real fortunate for a couple of reasons. For one thing, I was so fortunate to go directly from a hit television show to getting married and having three children. So I was able to, you know, to go from one great experience to an even more awesome experience. Mm. And so that was a real fortunate thing for me.
Did any of the kids in the cast have a real hard time afterwards, like they did in Different Strokes?
You know, I don't know. I guess you'd have to ask them, you know, what they went through. Nobody's, I don't think anybody's gone to jail or anything. So,
so that's pretty
I think
good.
Everybody's doing pretty good.
Yeah. I remember the last season of your show. Your character changed her tune completely and went and bought the school and became the headmistress of the school.
Yeah,
it must have been
exactly.
Kind of exciting. That must have, well, your role changed so much. It must have been a lot of fun to do that.
It really was fun.
Yeah, and it was a nice cast to work for, and it is just so cool now to go to TV Land and actually see you know,
yeah,
the facts of life.
It's a fun thing for me too.
Every night, yeah, and you should be taping them and showing them to the kids.
I know it. You're right. That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's what videotapes buy, you know.
Yeah, you're right.
And then when
I'll kick myself somebody if I don't, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should try to get a collection of them together, and then you'll have them.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's a great book, and it's a pleasure talking to you again after many years.
Well, thank you.
And Lisa Welch, the author of Creative Correction. It is available on the net at creativecorrection.com.
Actually, and, you know what? That's just a place for you to go and get ideas and learn about the book. Probably the best place to get it on the net, though,
Amazon.
Would be something just like Amazon.com,
yeah,
or BarnesandNoble.com.
And I'm pleased to also say that at PMPNetwork.com, where this interview will air, it's also available as well.
Hey, really? I didn't know that.
Yes, we have our own superstore. We sell all the books we talk to people
No
about,
kidding.
So.
Okay, well, that's great.
So Tyndale Press. And again, folks out there, check it out and continue watching Lisa on The Facts of Life. And we look forward to a reunion show. That'll be a lot of fun.
Good.
Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.